This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, so we'll start with the Nefesh HaChaim. It's nice to see you, the heroes of learning. It's a rainy night and it's Erev Pesach. Yes, yes, you really are the heroes. The women are really the heroes. The Erev Pesach on a rainy night to be here. But it's a big schus because through you we're able to record the shiur, and then there are hundreds of other people that have benefit from it too. And you will be suitably rewarded because the piece of Nefesh HaChaim, if I can get as far as I would like to get, will change your lives forever. How's that for a promise?
Okay.
Yeah, it was very. Yeah, I thought to myself, it was very good. It was very, very good. Yeah. I think it's quite interesting. Somebody said to me this week that it's quite interesting that when I consult to businesses, it costs them a lot of money. And what are they paying for? At best, if it works well, they're changing their business. So they're paying a lot of money to get a little bit more of Olam Hazeh, a little bit more of this world. In a shiur, don't have to pay any money, and it's not to make your business better, it's to make your life better. How much would that be worth if you figure out what business is willing to pay for the same things I teach in a shiur? Make a kal vachomer of how much that's worth. Same Torah, it comes from the same place. How much that's worth when it impacts a life and an olam haba, not just an olam hazeh. How much one should be willing to pay. But Torah, if anything, Torah has lost its kovod. Imagine if one were to charge for Torah what one charges for the same stuff in business. It would be, sorry?
They pay with time.
Yeah, they pay with time as well. They pay with time and a lot more. In Torah, we haven't got our heads around the fact that it's valued. The value of the Torah, we haven't got our heads around yet. That's why I say the fact that you come on a night like this just before Yom Tov, and I know this is not the only shiur you go to, a lot of learning. We have to get our heads around the value of Torah if we can use it. If we're just learning it and you can't use it, then it has limited value. You're learning Torah, it's very nice, it's wonderful. But the important thing is to be able to implement, to be able to actually use it. So let's see if we can find in the Nefesh HaChaim and later in the Gemara things that we can use. So the first piece is in Perek Chet. Shara Bey's Perek Ches. And here he explains a difficult Gemara in Bava Kamma in a way that's really fundamental. This is not even the piece that I said is life-changing, although this is too. The Gemara says, Kol ha'omer ha-kadosh baruch hu vatron hu yivosron chayohi. If one says that Hashem will, he'll forgo, he understands, he'll forgive. Such a person's life should be forgone. You're missing life, you're missing the point of life. Your life has no value if you think that the Ribbono Shel Olam will let things pass. Asher echayo niflas. This is a strange comment of the Gemara to make. And it affirms the view of many non-Jewish people and many Reformed Jewish people that our Torah is very harsh and very vindictive. What is this? That the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't forgive, doesn't forgo? What does it mean? But according to the way we've explained things, this Gemara is understood much better. This is not talking about Hashem avenging our deeds. That's not what this is about. Just as nature, science, is such that if you eat a food that damages you, a person will be damaged and will become ill. v'im sam hamovesu, and if he drinks poison, arsenic, you're Muslim and he'll die. That's the absolute consequence of the action. That's not somebody sentenced him to death. That's suicide. He killed himself. He drank the poison. That's what sin is. It's natural cause and effect. It's not a judge who stands up there and says, you're a bad person and I'm going to punish you for that. It's not that at all. It's natural cause and effect. Kevan sheken kova hu yisborach b'tzoyne, that's how Hashem fixed the world. Teva sidur matzovim v'nyoneim shel ha'olamos, the whole universe functions that way. Shema'asei ha'odem ha'toyvim uroim chas v'sholem. Human deeds, whether good or bad, hem ki'inyan ma'echal u'mozol lahem, is food, is like food for the human being. En shayach vatronus b'zeh, the word compromise or forgiving or forgoing doesn't apply. It's like jumping off a building and saying, gravity will forgive me. Gravity won't forgive you. It's got nothing to do with forgiveness. And when you hit the ground, it's like saying, gravity is really angry with me. And gravity couldn't care less about you. That's you who did it. It wasn't gravity. The laws of the Torah are laws of science. They simply reveal a causality that the Ribbono Shel programmed into the world. Everything has a consequence. And there's no way out of that consequence. There's nothing you can do to get out of that consequence. Just a sec. V'hu muchroch laharik lichlu chatumo shehigbir b'avono b'halomis. And you have to cleanse the negative forces, the tumor, the negative energy that you've created in the world, al yidei echot mebeis atikunim, with one of two methods. So built into the cause and effect of the world are also the methods of cleansing. And what are the methods of cleansing? Teshuvah and yisurin. Suffering and tshuva, and they're connected, because tshuva is painful and yisurin is painful. So at the end of the day, pain is the means of cleansing. I used this idea in a broader context just today in teaching leaders how to criticize. Because what do you want to do? There are two ways that you can criticize someone. The usual way we criticize someone is through ego. We feel it's a way of running them down, it's a way of making them feel bad, or of getting them off our back, just pushing them away. So you say something nasty, you're very critical of them. But if you want the person to change, if you're a leader or a parent, or you're in a relationship, and the purpose of the criticism is to get the other person to change, you've always got to stop yourself when you're about to criticize someone, whether to yourself in your head or to the other person. Stop and ask yourself, why am I doing it? What is the intent of my criticism? Is it to let off steam? That's ego. Is it to run the other person down? That's ego. Is it to exert power and control? That's ego. Or is it to effect change in the other person? I care about the other person, and I think they need the feedback to know they did something that offended me, they did something that hurt me, they did something that got me angry, and I need to give them that feedback because genuinely I would like to see them not doing that again. It would be better for them if they didn't do it again. That's the time you can criticize effectively. Until you're in that headspace, you can't criticize effectively, because what happens? When you're in that headspace, you criticize, and you criticize their ways to do it. I won't go through that now, but the important part of it is you can't avoid pain when you criticize. It's painful to get negative feedback, and there's nothing you can do about that. You can't make it not painful, other than give the person an anesthetic before you put them to sleep before you criticize them. If they're going to hear it, it's going to hurt. There's nothing you can do about that. But the pain is the transformation tool. That was the chiddush in what I taught these leaders today. Pain is the only tool of transformation. Sometimes pain is inflicted by outside circumstance, and sometimes it's by yourself. How many businesses only change when they go into pain? How many businesses, I was talking to a business leader yesterday, top business guy, who after 6 months of working with him finally said what he was supposed to say. And one of his underlings said to me, but 6 months we've been trying to get him there, all of a sudden he says it as if it's his own idea. What happened? He suffered pain last week. Severe pain. That's the tragedy. We need pain to transform. Without pain, we don't change. Without pain, we're comfortable. So we can have self-inflicted pain through self-analysis, through being sensitive, through being very aware. That's tshuva. That's when we do tshuva. We feel the pain. Nobody has to say a word. We don't need negative feedback. We don't need to hurt ourselves. We don't need punishment. We feel the pain. The important thing is, what do we do with it? Do you feel the pain for a moment and then turn on the television? Do you feel the pain for a moment and then go off to learn Gemara? Do you feel the pain and what do you do with the pain? Or do you sit with it a bit and work through it and feel it and figure out where it is in your body and where it is in your soul and where it is in your emotion and what needs to change in you to get rid of this pain? To get rid of it not only now, but that it doesn't happen again in the future. That's the power of pain. So when you criticize, yes, you're causing the other person pain. But now, if you criticize the person in an attacking way, what does the person do? What do you do when you're attacked? You put up defenses. And what does the defense ensure? That you don't feel the pain. So the purpose of the criticism is wasted. So I say, Bradley, you're an idiot. How could you do that? So what is Bradley thinking to himself? He calls me an idiot. You know what he is? Who does he think he is? So he doesn't feel any pain. He just feels anger. So everything's been a waste. We've damaged the relationship and nothing's been achieved. But if I take him aside and I say, I really have to talk to you. Something's happened. I'm sure you're not aware of it. It's important that you're aware of it. The reason I'm telling you is because I think so highly of you. And that's why it hurt me so much. If I didn't think so highly of you, it wouldn't have bothered me. It bothered me because of what I think of you. And I take him through a slower process. It still hurts. Oh my goodness, didn't intend that. It hurts. And then he sits with the hurt a little bit. And it never happens again. That's how we grow. If we're willing to take pain and work with pain, then we can transform. That's the only way, says the Nefesh HaChaim. Only through tshuva, either we reflect internally and find the pain within ourselves, or something happens outside. Either Hashem gives us a knock, the world gives us a knock, or the people around us give us knocks. And if we're able to be sensitive to the knocks, we realize we've done something that's causing this. We're attracting this stuff. We're doing things that are causing it. And we've got to find out what we have to do differently. So that's what it means. And to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatron implies that Hashem is sitting there pressing all the buttons, making decisions. Let this guy fall. Let that one have an accident. Let this one do that. Let that one do that. No, says the Nefesh HaChaim. Ashkochen thinks is a different issue. We'll talk about that separately. Don't allow that to confuse the picture that the Nefesh HaChaim is building of a system, a pre-programmed universal system of natural feedback. That's what it is. In Eastern philosophy, they call it karma. That's exactly what karma is. You're responsible for what you do, and what you do brings about the effect, and there's nothing that, once you've done it, there's nothing you can do to stop the effect. They don't have tshuva. They only have pain. They only have one way. They haven't discovered tshuva, or maybe it doesn't work with outside of the Torah system, which is more likely. But they have discovered, by studying the universe, they've seen the causality, that a negative deed, and a negative deed they define as an ego-driven deed, which we would call a deed driven by Yetzer Hara, which in other words is an Avera. So what have they worked out by thousands of years of watching causality and recording it? They've said there's natural cause and effect. It's not punishment. There's a force in the world. They don't know what it is. They don't give it a name. There's a force in the world that brings about natural cause and effect of moral and immoral action, of good and bad action, and we can't escape that. It's not possible to escape that.
If you're talking about it being in a kind of scientific way, well, we should be able to say that if you steal, this and this will happen, or if you...
That's a good question. So you're asking, if it's so scientific, why can't we predict the exact nature of the effect from the cause? The answer is because there are too many variables. It's not just as if, it's not like, you know, you drop a ball, the ball bounces, and all you have to know is how much spring there is in the ball, and how hard the floor is, and how far the distance is, and you can figure out. Theoretically, you could do that, but there are millions of variables. Your background, and where you're coming from, and your intention, and all sorts of things that take place. So you can't, all you know is, you've set out a negative force that will come back to you. That you know for sure. Every negative force you put out will come back to you. It might take a day, and it might take 20 years. It will come back to you. And unless you've done tshuva or experienced pain in the process, which is also the coming back to you, the experiencing pain is the coming back. Everything we do comes back to us. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatron. Nothing we do doesn't come back to us. No, it's not Hashem saying, you naughty guy, I'm going to punish you. That's not what it is. Hashem programs the world, says the Nefesh HaChaim. Again, in Torah, it's a big chiddush because we think a lot like Christians about God and judgment and all of that kind of thing. As I've often said, it's interesting. Eastern religion, Eastern philosophy, not religion, that's something else. Eastern philosophy is interesting because they get to where they got through documentation, through research. It's just researched over thousands of years. They've just watched and noticed and kept documents of things, and they've just seen the patterns over thousands of years. The same as if you watch your own life, you start seeing a pattern, but you need a bit of length of life. That's one of the benefits of getting older. You start seeing. When you're young, you don't see the causality, because sometimes the causality hasn't hit you back yet. So it takes a while. As you get older, you start seeing the patterns. It becomes obvious as you look back. And when you look back on 500 years, or 1,000 years, or 2,000 years of civilization, and you study it this way, all of a sudden it becomes very, very obvious and very, very clear as to what the nature of the causality is. But the important thing is, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatron, there's no getting away from it. You're doing something negative, it's going to need, there's going to be a negative repercussion, or Yisurin, or Tshuva. There's nothing else.
If
you've done the right Tshuva, it doesn't come back. If you've done the right Tshuva all the way, depends how much Tshuva, but theoretically, if you followed the principles of Tshuva, there are the cases the Rambam brings in Hilchos Tshuva, certain things that you still need death for, because that's part of the Tshuva process. But it's not the negative energy coming back to you, that's just the end of the Tshuva process. But if you followed the appropriate Tshuva process all the way, it doesn't apply. In the Daf Yomi at the moment, we're not the piece that we're doing at the moment, but what are we doing? We're doing things around Cheirem and Nidui and Zifo. Things that people get into situations that are similar to mourning for doing things wrong. And what's the intention? It's not a punishment. It's to give you the time to reflect, to go inwards, to sit with pain so that you can correct, so that there can be a self-correction process. And that should be the aim of our lives, is to continuously self-correct, in which case we should embrace pain. Not that we want to go out looking for it, and I'm not talking about tragic pain, But pain that alerts us, that keeps us alive, that keeps us aware and responsive, that's the pain that keeps us on track, that keeps us focused. It's like you're driving recklessly on the side of the road and you keep on hitting the barriers before you go over the side of the cliff and you swear at the barriers. What are you damaging my car for? Get out of the way. Just hit the barriers. You're lucky. You're lucky you've hit the barriers. There are barriers there. That's what pain is. Pain are the barriers at the edge of the cliff. Just to tell you to get back on track. But you've got to hear it, you've got to feel it. Sometimes it takes a long time to get the message, to figure out what the message is. But we have to go very deep within ourselves to get that. Yes. Yes. We can choose. If we do teshuva, we escape the pain. But teshuva is hard to do. It's much easier not to do the avera in the first place. As hard as that is, it's even harder to do. I'm going to skip forward. There's some difficult and complex things from the Zohar which we don't need to do right now. But I want to get to the part that I promised you will be life-changing. In chapter 11, Perek Yud Aleph. Mashikos of Lifnei Chelo, he talks about an earlier piece in the previous paragraph. Romazeh Ikar Agodol Shelinyan HaTfilah. Here is the insight into the real foundational principle of tefillah, of prayer. Sheklal Kavanosuhu. You're going to have to understand this piece of Nefesh HaChaim. You're going to have to be willing to leave behind all of your assumptions about davening. Davening is not what you think it is. That's where you've got to, otherwise you don't even begin to get it. If you read the essay that I sent out today from the website, it's about how Pesach is a time to learn how to let go of things. That's what Pesach is. The whole Isur Chometz is a process of learning from the Bedikas Chometz, the Mechiras Chometz, the Bir Chometz. It's a process of learning how to let go of assumptions, how to let go of things. And one of the things you've got to let go is your assumptions about what tefillah is. Sheklal kavanosuhu, because the entire intention of tefillah, Lechavein rak lohisif kach b'kedusha is just to increase the positive energy in the world. Kedusha. That's what tefillah is. It's not about I'm got a sick auntie who I want to make better and I need panosa and I need this and I need that. That's not what tefillah is. It's just about one thing. And that's always concerned me in tefillah, is if the whole thing is to move beyond ego, what's tefillah all about? Oh, well, I need this, I need that, I need this, I want this, I need this, I need that. That's what it's all about. It's all about ego. No, says the Nefesh HaChaim. It's not about that at all. Just as an officer in the army puts his private life aside and all he's concerned about in the battle is the honor of the king. That he'll achieve the crown of the kingdom of that state and will be uplifted in his kingdom. So it is essential for the straight person to apply all of his kavona, all of his intention, not most of it or some of it, all of it, in the purity of his mind, in his davening, rak only to add positive energy into the holy worlds. And to ignite the powers from above, to use his voice to align with the upper voice and bring down brocha and energy from there. So through our voice we can connect with a voice up there, and that voice generates the energy. It's not that the energy comes from us, we ignite that, the source, we ignite the generator, and the generator radiates the energy back to the earth, to the world. And to remove negative energy from the world. The world becomes enhanced with Hashem's malchus. And davening has nothing to do with your own personal needs. Nothing. Now we begin to understand why our davening isn't always answered. Because we're still davening the right way. We don't know what we're doing. You read this and you think to yourself, but isn't this tragic? Why aren't there davening classes? And when you do go to a davening class, what do you learn? The meaning of the words. The meaning of the words are not the most important part. The meaning of the heart is what's important. Even if you don't understand the words, it's better if you understand the words. But the important thing is the kavana. How do you feel that? How do you think that? How do you get that kavana? He says, look at the davening for Rosh Hashanah. When would there be more of an opportunity to ask for your own needs than Rosh Hashanah? You're standing before the judge. He's judging for the entire year. All you're doing is talking about God. You don't talk about yourself once, the entire Rosh Hashanah. What kind of thing is that? That Hashem should be elevated as before the chet. He says, you'll ask about the davening Shachris, Mincha, and Ma'ariv. Even though it appears that it's all about your own needs, it is clear to anybody who understands, it's obvious when you read it, the intention of the authors of Tefillah, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, was not what they appear to be in the words. That was not the intention. As I've already explained in chapter 10. He'll go into it a little bit more deeply, don't worry. The tefillos neged tzmilit kitiklum davening is in place of the korban tomid. Your oila is kol le'ishim. And what was a korban tomid? Was an oila. If the davening was about yourself, then it should be for korban shlomim. Those korbanos that you eat. The fact is, tzmilim, you don't eat. Nobody eats the tomid. The tomid is an oila. And that's what the davening is. So clearly, davening is not about us, not about your needs. Kula legavaya sakur, it all goes to Hashem. The lo yobayim chelik hed yet klal. Humans got no part of it. After hilchus gemilah lo b'shas, but we've learned in the Gemara shahayochid rashay lechadesh dover b'tfilosa atzorche amoy atzmoy b'tzarei b'chol brocha lefi inyona. The Gemara says quite clearly we are allowed to insert private prayers in every brocha for our own needs. Gam bezet zorich, even in this, the intention should be, shelote tachlis kavanose al tsaroi, his kavana should not be about his pain, veloi zu haderech hanachoyne leyisholim b'liboisom, and that's not the correct way to daven. So even though you're davening refa'enu, you can add in, and by the way, ribbono shel olam, I've just been diagnosed with an illness and I'm very worried and I'm concerned and please give me a refuah. That's not the kavon. That's not your intention. So what's your intention? Are you surprised? Isn't it amazing? This is not, what you say is not what you intend. So you're saying one thing, what are you intending? In any case, it's odd. Why should we daven to God to take away our pain and suffering? He says, I've just taught you that there's cause and effect, and that if you're getting pain, it's for good reason. It's a result of something you've done, and God doesn't forgive and forgo. So what are you davening for? The doctor's prescribed medicine, and now you're saying, please, doctor, I don't want the medicine, it's not good, it doesn't taste nice, take it away from me. You wouldn't do that. You'd say, thank you, doctor, and take your medicine. Try and get better. If you have to go for an operation, would you plead with the doctor not to take out your appendix? It's in pain, and it's going to hurt, and the operation hurts. But do it. Save me. And if the way to save me is through some intermediate pain, then do it. Why are we asking God to take away the pain He brought on us? We pay the doctor. We pay the surgeons. We should be paying, we should be thanking Hashem for the tzar, not asking Him to take it away. It's a good question, isn't it? So why would we ask God to take away Yisurim? We've just learned that pain is the power of transformation, the tool of transformation. Why take it away? You should be thanking God that He's communicating with you. And you sin below ovens, the Gemara says. There's no pain without sin. No such thing. There's negative feedback, negative action. You know that for sure. Feeling out, there's a cause for every outcome. If pain gets removed, how will you have kapora? How will you improve yourself? How will you develop yourself? So here comes the answer. Omnam tachlis hakavono tzricho tzitie rak tzorech gavoya. Your intention should be God's need, not yours. Ki b'mokom shiyesh chilul shmo yizbarach kigun tzoras klal Yisrael. Because where there's a chilul Hashem, such as where Yisrael are in pain, be'emor am Hashem eileh. And the Goyim say, is this God's nation? Look how they're suffering. What are we going to ask Hashem? Stop the chilul Hashem. That we're getting the pain, we understand it's good for us. But Ribbono Shel Olam, you're in pain. You're suffering. Look what chilul is. We've got to identify with Hashem's pain. It's not about our pain. Is there an avoda? Is there a practice in the history of the world, in any civilization, that is so uprooting of ego as tefillah, Reb Chaim Volozhiner's way? And tefillah, the conventional way, reinforces ego. Need this and I this and need this and my family and me and my and mine and mine. It's completely destructive. Not only doesn't it achieve what it's designed to achieve, it's completely destructive. Yeah, okay, so the plural, what are you thinking in your head? You know, get everybody else better and give everybody else a panos. And when you put in your private prayer, do you put that in plural too? So we're not always that happy about the plural. We say it in the plural because that's how it is. But our minds are not necessarily there, most of us. We're thinking about our own issues and those who are very close to us. Says the Nefesh HaChaim, forget it. Tefillah is about Hashem's tzar. Feel His pain. It's about His pain. He doesn't deserve it. You deserve it. It's doing good for you. It's not doing Him good. Whatever pain you've got is healing you. The pain He's getting is destroying Him, so to say. It's heaven for Him. What happens if it's not Chilul Hashem? You're just suffering. There's no Chilul Hashem. You've got a sore toe. No Chilul Hashem. Nobody has to know, but you're suffering. Yesh mokum gamkin levakesh lefon av yizborach al gudel hatzar shon maila. You can cry when you read this. The pain is Ribbono Shel Olam. That I have a sore toe is understandable. I must have done something to deserve it, and I'll get through it. I'll take it ba'ahavna. But I know that when one of your sons, me, has a sore toe, and it's irritating him, I know that you suffer too. Why put yourself through that, Rabbi Yeshua? I don't want you to feel the pain. And this can't be fake. This has to be authentic. When a person's in suffering, what is the Shekhinah saying? I'm suffering in pain. The Shekhinah said is saying, my arm is in pain, my stomach's in pain. And we talked about how the world has a kind of a human form, the universe, Hashem's energy has forms that are similar to the human being. That's Tzelem Elohim. That there's a parallelism. And we are so important to the Ribbono Shel Olam that if we're suffering just a little bit, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, we're Mesakin Tfilo, so as to help us try and ask the Ribbono Shel Olam not to suffer, to express our suffering, our feelings for the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what it is. It's the most amazing thing. You see it sometimes when people are availing their and they're suffering, and you come in, you had a little sorrow, whatever, you haven't been well or something like that, and the Ovel, the mourner, says, how are you, how are you feeling? It's kind of like superhuman almost. But what does it do? It does something for them too. It gets them out of their Torah into your Torah. And they're moving out of ego into a divine place of caring for another human being, even when they're in that state. And one notices and one feels that. That's what it's talking about. When you can elevate yourself out of your own nonsense, no matter how severe and sometimes tragic your nonsense is, I say nonsense in inverted commas, because for us it isn't nonsense, it can be life-threatening. But as far as the universe is concerned, it's still pretty much nonsense. No big deal. So you're going to die. So the world goes on. The universe goes on. Not a big deal in the universal scheme of things. The problem is the Ribbono Shel Olam is suffering. That's serious. That you're suffering is not serious. Doesn't make a big difference. On the contrary, it's good for you. And it doesn't bother anybody else. It's your own private issue. But the Ribbono Shel Olam is suffering. That's serious. That's what tefillah is. To link into the suffering of the Ribbono Shel Olam and to get right out of your own suffering. And what do you think happens when you do that? What do you think happens? Try it. The moment you get out of your own suffering and link into other people's, your suffering disappears. It's part of the law of the universe. You feel your suffering when you focus on your suffering. I've often said, if you try right now and you focus on any part of your body, you will feel pains you weren't aware of a minute ago. That's how it is. The more we focus on ourselves, the more we attract suffering. The more we focus on others, the less we attract suffering. Law of the universe. And if we focus on the Ribbono Shel Olam, then it's what. So when we go on, we say, our prayers were answered. No. Your prayer was answered in that the Ribbono Shel Olam saw how you were able to overcome your own ego, get out of it, be concerned about Him, and now what's the message back to you? You've got your lesson. You've learned your lesson. That's okay. I know a woman who says, it's quite profound, it's quite amazing, that whenever anything bad happens to her, she figures out what's wrong. She says to Rosha, she says, Rosha, I got it. No, you're talking about, we can move on now. And it goes, finished, whatever it is, the most amazing Taurus, sometimes. Gone, finished. She says, right away, I get it, got it, I understand what it is, let's move on. No reason for this pain and suffering anymore, I'm making these changes. It's astonishing when we try and realize this. You see, we treat davening as a routine, and it isn't. Davening is an avoda. An avoda means work, means a spiritual practice, and anybody who's tried a spiritual practice knows how much discipline it is. Try yoga. You've got to do it regularly. You've got to do it every day. You've got to do it several times a week. You've got to have somebody training you. It's got to be just right. You've got to get your head right. You've got to get your mind space right. Your concentration right. Your sense of balance. Everything has to be right. It's hard. It takes a long, long time to get it right. Try and learn meditation. Daily. You've got to do it daily. You've got to get your mind right. You've got to get your posture right. You've got to be fairly physically fit to be able to do it as well. Oh, it takes a lot going on. What do you think? Davening is just a that's it. They all do the hard and the difficult and the challenging things, and our spiritual practices are just routines that we go through in monkey fashion. Ours are much harder, require much more discipline. But we get to the heart of the universe when we use ours. We get to the core of everything when we use ours. That's what tefillah is, and that's what na'avodah is. It's working on ourselves to the point where, in the midst of our most painful tzorah, our only concern is the kavod of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then we've made it as human beings. Then we've got rid of egos. And it's not only in our relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What do you think it's like dealing with somebody whose only concern is the kavod of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Nothing else worries them. You know what that's like dealing with somebody like that? It's the opposite of dealing with somebody whose only concern is their own well-being. It's exactly the opposite. And you know what it's like dealing with somebody whose only concern is their own well-being? This is the opposite. And most of us are somewhere in between. And I've had this chus of seeing people like that, whose only concern is the kodesh, and nothing else is their concern. Nothing else. There's a piece Rabbi Chaim showed me of where Rav Dessler responds. It was written just after the war, even during the war. Where he responds to the critics of the Gedolim, why didn't they tell people to leave Eastern Europe? And all sorts of different reasons and things are given why they didn't tell them to leave. And he says, I don't know why they didn't tell them to leave. One thing I know, that there was only, and that is from seeing them at meetings, at conferences, discussing national issues, these people were only interested in Klal Yisrael and Kavod Shemayim. There was no other interest. And we live in a world today that's so full of dirty politics everywhere. I'm not talking about politics in Parliament and in Congress. That's where you expect there to be politics. That's like saying, shift, there's a smell coming out of the garbage dump. Of course there's a smell coming. You expect a smell coming out of the garbage dump. But if you walk into your bedroom or into your sitting room and there's a smell coming, you say, oh, what's going on here? That there's politics in politics, that's where politics is meant to be. But that there's politics in Torah, that there's politics among human beings, that there's politics among families, what's that? What is that? What it is, if we can get through our davening, we can get to a point where even when in our deepest pain, there's only one thing we're worried about, is Kavod Shemayim. That's what a community of Jews is meant to be. That's what a Jew is meant to be. That's what a mentor is meant to be. Just imagine what a society we're talking about. So I promise you this would change your life. The truth is it won't change your life. I wasn't really telling the truth. This alone won't change your life. It's a tool with which you can change your life. That's all it can do. Nothing can change your life except you. But you can change your life using this tool if you're able to do that.